Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the App Trap. My name is Paul Usher, and today I want to challenge you with some of the questions behind mobile development, in particular, when somebody comes to you with, I want an app. Who here was in the last session where they did Office 365 Next Wave? A few? So it was interesting where they went back in time and looked at things like the Nokia, and we're going to take a quick walk back in time today as well. Now, we're living in an environment where quite often we'll hear the phrase, there's an app for that. And pretty much we can't live without our mobile devices, whether it be a phone or a tablet. And I had the luxury, I suppose, a couple of weeks ago to visit a friend of mine in Washington State. And he said to me, Paul, we're going to go sightseeing. I was like, okay, just come off the MVP summit. And I thought, a bit of sightseeing around Seattle, Tacoma would be quite nice. Thing was that we pulled up into an airfield, and he pulls this out of a hangar. It's a 1967 Piper Aero. And as I climbed on board, I thought, they're analog. How on earth is this thing supposed to stay up? It's 50 years old, and what are we going to do? Interestingly enough, as we started flying around the Washington State views, we got pretty close up to Mount St. Helen. And I was really thankful that around about this time, he had his iPad out with an app that was giving him a lot of information. One of the rare views that we managed to capture was the fact that here is the inside of the crater from an active volcano. Of course, I was capturing this on an app on my iPhone, flying around a couple of hundred miles an hour at 10,000 feet. But I was really thankful for the fact that he did have an app for that, something that could give him weather information, altitude information, details as to airports or where he's coming. Of course, it would be remiss of me if I didn't show you a selfie with a mountain in the background just so it proves I was actually there. Now, as I said before, we rely on apps for absolutely everything. We rely on apps for banking, weather, calculator, footy scores, placing bets, photos, videos, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram. We've got apps for even waking us up on a morning. So we've become so dependent on these things, which makes it interesting then when people say, oh, I want an app. Now, when I started mobile development, we had devices like this. On the left-hand side is the Cyan Organizer Series 2. It had two lines of LCD characters. And we thought things were getting really special, so that's late 80s. And then early into the 90s, we had the Cyan Organizer Series 3 with this graphic interface. Now, the question is, has it really come that far between back in the day, when the only way we could communicate was with a cable back to a PC, and with the devices that we're using today? The device choices have obviously become a lot greater. We can now choose the form factors, the type of machine we want, the manufacturer, the operating system, and in a lot of cases, how we communicate, whether it's just Wi-Fi, whether it's through LTE or other mobile networks. A few weeks ago, I came across a tweet, and I contacted the author of it because I wanted to share it with you guys, and he said, absolutely. He's a Xamarin developer, but this was, whilst it's humorous, it came from a real-life scenario. A friend said to him, hey, I want to build an app. He said, okay, that's $35,000. Oh, really? I thought it would only be two. And his response was, yep, I thought so too, until it took me the 500 hours to code it. And that's something that's interesting when you move into app development, because quite often we get caught up in little things that shouldn't take so long. Now, one of the things I want today is some interaction too, so I don't want you all just sitting up there and being like quiet. Are you having a good time at Ignite so far? Big lunch? The airplane show that Microsoft put on for everybody outside? So, there's certainly a lot of truth in that particular scenario. Who in the room right now has written an app, a mobile app? Okay, so there's not as many as I would have thought, but a few. Now, what I want to do is spend a little bit of time looking at some key questions as to what you should be asking when somebody comes to you and says, I want to build an app. And some of these questions lead into others, obviously. Some of them you might think, well, that's pretty stupid. You'd be asking that anyway. But you'd be surprised whether it's your mate down the road that comes with the next big Angry Birds busting idea, or whether it's your department leader or a commercial client that comes to you and says, I want to build an app. So some of the key questions. What device do we want to target? What operating system? What orientation? And what input mechanism? Now I've got a few pages of questions, so we'll start going through and breaking them down into more detail. When a lot of people say, I want an app, straight away your thoughts would go to what? Phone or tablet? Okay, they're louder than you guys, you just speak up. So phone, I want an app, it's a phone app. Well, technically it could be phone or tablet, but majority of people think phone, that's okay. Some people want both. Why can't I have it for both? Well, in some cases, absolutely. It's simply going to be a matter of whether your budget and time frame allows. I mean, really, what's the difference if you're developing for a phone? Isn't a tablet just a bit bigger version? Don't all we have to do is just play with the UI a little bit? What operating system? Now, it could be just a matter of, again, a department leader coming and saying, we want an app for Android. We want an app for iOS or the Windows platform. Or worse still, they come and say, I want an app for all three. And there's a lot of key decisions you have to make based on the answer to that simple question. If you're working in a scenario where it's bring your own device, then you don't get to control what platform it is. You've got to cater for all three. The answer to this question heavily dictates what development environments and languages you're going to use, which can be quite a controversial question as well. Now, the next question I've got here is, what orientation? Might seem like such a strange or simple little question, but it can have a big bearing, because orientation coupled with input mechanism can control a lot of different things. And this starts to drive questions as to why does it differ between traditional desktop and web development when you start talking about an app and a device. Who runs an iPhone? Android? Ooh, outnumbered. And Windows Phone? Growing in numbers. All right. Anybody who's looked at the calculator app on an iPhone, you open it up into standard portrait mode, it's a basic calculator. What happens when you rotate it? It becomes a scientific calculator. Straight away, you need to start thinking about how your app is going to work in different orientations. Now, it could be that you simply show more data if you're working with a column-based system or data input. Orientation coupled with things like the input device can also cause you a great deal of difficulty. See, if you're looking at something like an iPad, and this is the iPad Pro, it's like 10 times bigger than it needs to be, but it's going to have at least a third of the screen filled up with a keyboard if I bring it up in a soft keyboard mode in landscape. The problem with that, if I'm doing a data entry app and I'm not careful, my fields will be covered by the keyboard. Unless I start implementing things like scroll views or start doing some other quirky data input, moving views up when I'm doing my programming. And unfortunately, I've seen time and time again where developers don't find that out until user acceptance testing. And there's nothing worse than a user going, oh, does it work this way? And then you go, not sure. So whilst it seems like a very, very simple question, orientation and then coupled with input can be a big thing. See, it could be that you design for the fact that your keyboard's going to be taking up a 30-inch screen. But then what happens when they throw an external keyboard on? All these things we don't really have to deal with in a traditional desktop sense or mobile development. Another interesting one. Where's the data coming from that I'm going to interact with? Now, if you're building a game, chances are you're not really going to worry too much other than a scoreboard. But even a scoreboard has to get data from somewhere. When I've captured some data, where am I going to push that to? And again, invariably, clients that come to you and say, I want to build an app, don't have this thought pattern. They've not catered for any of this. Yes, their back-end systems might have some APIs, might have some RESTful services, but there's nothing that you can hook directly into. So it becomes a matter of you're out there building a mobile app, and now it's actually up to you, because usually it's now your fault, that you're in charge of moving the data around. So you've got to build not just the app, but the communications engine. Then, of course, the question gets raised, well, where's that going to sit? Do they have a server available? Do we have to provide a virtual machine? Do I have to spin up something in Azure to handle it? And as simple as some of these questions may seem, they're happening at all levels, from small businesses all the way up through the government sectors. One example of this is the Department of Education here in Queensland. Anybody from DEET here today? Too shy to put your hand up if you are? They came with a very detailed document to a local developer. Great analysis had gone into it, months of work. And they wanted a data capturing application for a national standard for assessing childcare centers. The design of the app was beautiful. But then the question came, where are we pushing this to? Because it's evident you can't do everything on the device. The question I asked the slide earlier about what device, they'd already answered that. They decided to go to the developer and say, we want an app. We're going to use iPads. In fact, we're so adamant we're going to use iPads, we've already ordered 200 of them. So now, you've got to make it work. Which was an interesting scenario. Talk through all the different processes and problems we might encounter. And we sat in a meeting. I was brought in to sort of offer some consulting at that point. We sat in a meeting with IT. And we said, well, look, given the time frame for the project, yes, it can be delivered on iOS, no problem at all. I don't necessarily agree with the decision you made just to pre-purchase these devices. Like, hello, let's talk through it first. But the decision was made. We need some kind of web service, and we need a SQL database to manage all this data. No problem. They said, yeah, we can spin one up in about 10 minutes. I said, cool, we start testing tomorrow. Oh, no, it's going to take 3 months of requisitions. The client wasn't going to be happy, like the internal division. And so at that point, the decision was made to move on to Microsoft Azure, which we'll cover in a little while. That project went on to be really successful. But if it had been left to just the straight, oh, I want an app, it was just going to be pushed from one department to another because nobody had done the due diligence. And I say due diligence. When you start looking at designing a mobile app, it is slightly different. It's a different train of thought to a traditional app. And of course, moving data around gets a little bit more complicated when you're dealing with images and photos, whether you're capturing signatures or providing other services. Now, get my train of thought back. Depending on what device, what operating system, it's going to open up even more questions. If you're looking to build an app at a consumer level, who's your target audience? Are you actually going to need to build your app for the app stores? If so, what's the process there? Are you going to be delivering to business to business? Are you going to be using enterprise licenses? There are so many pitfalls depending on the simple answers to these questions. For example, in iOS land, if you're using a commercial and enterprise agreement with Apple, your provisioning profile expires every 12 months, your developer profile every 2 years, and your app will stop working in the field. Now, I can promise you it's no fun having 200 people running around the countryside with an app that no longer works, and you've got to try and reprovision. So there's a lot of different things if you're moving into this sector. Again, I raise the what software do I need for development? But before we move on to looking at the different IDEs and things like that, let's also consider some other things. When you're running a mobile app, you've got no control as to what's happening on that device. Now, the answer before was that phones are the more thoughtful thing as to an app. It could still be a tablet. But you imagine your user is sitting there inside your application, and the phone rings. What's going to happen? Well, your app's going to be put into the background or background state of some type. Now, depending on whether the user then accepts the call or rejects the call. If they reject, your app's going to come back up, no problem. But if they accept the call, your app is now put into the background, and there's nothing at all that you can do about that. While it's in the background, you're at the complete mercy of the operating system. The operating system can come along and go, oh, this app's been in the background long enough, I'm just going to terminate it. And it will do so without any discrimination. If you're not thinking along those terms when you start developing your app, what's going to happen to whatever the user was in the middle of? It's just going to get lost. So you're going to have to start thinking about state. If your app then comes back up from being in the background, you want, or reloaded, you're going to want to make sure that they can continue doing whatever they did. Another consideration is memory management. If you're dealing with particularly photos, the devices that your software is running on are very protective about memory. You can't start having multiple copies of a high-res image to play around with. So again, with very little warning to you, there are some events raised, but with little warning, your app could be terminated very quickly. Debugging on devices is certainly a lot more difficult than debugging in the traditional sense as well. So straight away, you need to start thinking differently with some of those things. Software development environments. Who's heard of a little company called Xamarin? Yeah, most of you. The concept is simple. We can develop cross-platform utilizing C#, and they've got VB support for the VB guys if there are any in the room. Using your existing skill set and then port it across. Anybody been through Xamarin University? No? It is fun. But one of the gotchas for working with something like Xamarin is the fact that you need to understand everything about the operating system. Now, if you're working with just one platform, the recommendation is go native. So if you've just been told you're going to work on iOS products, I wouldn't necessarily recommend learning Objective-C these days. Swift is available, but go native. The reason I say that, if you're working down the Xamarin path, you still have to learn so much about the underlying platform. For example, you need to understand in iOS what a UI view is, what a table view controller is, what a cell view is, and how that is recycled in its use. If you're working on the Android platform, you need to learn about activities. You need to understand what's going on in that eco-structure as well. So much so that you learn that much about the actual device you're running on that you might as well be writing in native. Yes, there's arguments to say, well, we can share libraries, and Xamarin Forms is certainly making that a whole lot easier. Now, I'm not putting down Xamarin. I've been through Xamarin University, and I use their product. In fact, one of the demos we've got today is using Xamarin Studio. So if the preference is native, and yet you can still recycle your skill set using something like C#, what's the other alternative? One of the fastest growing developer communities around is Adobe Cordova, or PhoneGap. It allows you to deliver a hybrid solution utilizing another skill set of languages, being HTML, CSS3, and JavaScript. Now, I know a lot of developers certainly start going, oh, I don't want to learn JavaScript, I don't want to learn another language, why can't I use Xamarin, I've got my C# skills. Well, as I just said before, you're still going to have to learn the subset of that anyway, what's going on the device. The beauty with using a hybrid solution is the fact that you don't have to worry about the underlying architecture. I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to be working on what's known as an SPA, or single page application. And that means that your code is running effectively inside a web view on the device. So it's not going off and finding it, it's loaded as a package, but it's basically a compiled web page, for want of a better term. Some arguments are that, well, to do that, it's going to run slower. That's not the case either. There have been a number of companies that put forward tests in environments like this where they'd hand out a couple of devices and simply say, oh, which one's running hybrid, which one's running native? and nobody could pick it. The reason that I'm a big advocate of the whole HTML JavaScript solution is because I think over the next 5-10 years, we're going to come across it as developers more and more. See, the web war has already been won. Flash is dead. Silverlight is dead. What's left? HTML, JavaScript, CSS3. So if the web war has already been won, and there's a way to take that skill set or that knowledge and lever it into the mobile space, then to me, that's the smarter way to go after native. One of the interesting things, and we saw the demo earlier with the Office guys, which are, they've got some really cool stuff happening too. So much of what we do requires us to be online. But if there's one rule, if there's one thing you can take away from a session like this today, it's this. Always design with offline in mind. There is never any guarantee that your app is going to have connectivity. Now, it could be that you say, well, they're only ever going to use it in the office. I've got Wi-Fi. Doesn't matter. Your Wi-Fi could drop. They could walk into an elevator. Now, we've got clients all over the world using devices, whether it be in the mines of Mount Isa, or even just driving from Brisbane to the Gold Coast, there are spots where you have no internet. And again, think about that user experience. You do not want it that the user spent time putting something into your app, and then it just drops and crashes unceremoniously because you've got no connectivity. Now, we're becoming more and more of a cloud nation. I'm cool with that. But if you don't design with offline in mind, you're going to end up with pain. Then you start thinking about, well, if I do that, how am I going to synchronize data? And depending on the platform that you choose to develop, that brings up another whole set of questions. For example, if you use native or you use something like Xamarin, you've got access to an underlying file system. If you use hybrid, well, that's more difficult because all of a sudden, you've got no control as to what the underlying browser engine is. So iOS would be Safari or WebView. And then on Android, it's their own ecosystem. There's limits as to what you can do as far as cache data inside a browser. So then you're working on plugins within the PhoneGap substructure. The problem with that is that when it comes to debugging, you can't just debug in a browser. You've got to debug on a device. Debugging on a device is more problematic, and you're left with another set of problems. All those things form the basis of Michael's quote as to why it took 500 hours for an app. And whilst it is a very humorous thing to look at, and certainly when he posted it, there is so much truth behind that statement. And it's those sorts of things that when your development team sit down and start saying, oh yeah, we can build this, mobile apps by their very nature are simple. Most people don't want complicated, fancy graphic things floating all over the screen unless you're working on games. So let's look at it. We've got data input. We're collecting or displaying some data, charting maybe. None of it's rocket science. But it's all those other little things that start to get you in a bind when it comes to working towards your timelines. Ooh, catch up with the slides now. I'm a big advocate of Microsoft Azure, especially when it comes to working with mobile services or with mobile applications and then hooking into different things. So everybody here familiar with Azure? Been playing around with different things? Show of hands, make sure you're still awake. I know it's getting late in the day. Pub's calling. It's the Gold Coast. So there's so many different ways to leverage Microsoft Azure when it comes to working with mobile devices. What I'll do is I'll switch over to machine number 6. Oh, technology is good when it works, isn't it? And let's take a look. When it comes to a simple or less complicated style of saving data, can everybody see that okay? Yeah. Then mobile services can be your friend. In fact, so much so that you could spin up an Azure mobile service inside a couple of minutes, and actually have it do all the heavy lifting for your application. And to do that, for those that aren't familiar with the Azure portal, after you log in, it would be a matter of clicking New, Mobile Service, and Create. Now, I'm purposely not going to switch to what they call the preview portal, because there's inherent differences between some of the services that are still in preview. As with most things with Microsoft Azure, I can come through and create a mobile service. It's simply a URL that has to have a unique name. So MSAU Ignite 2, because I already used Ignite, and we see the little green tick. At this point, I can connect to an existing SQL database or create a new one. Now, behind the scenes, mobile services is using Azure SQL, but I don't have to worry too much about what's happening other than stepping through this wizard. I get to pick my subscription and my location and whether I want a JavaScript or .NET backend. What we end up with is a mobile service like we can see here. One of the things that I particularly love about what Microsoft did with mobile services is they said start out with, we love all operating systems. And I think that's something that we're seeing a lot more of from the modern Microsoft, is that they're not just being tunnel vision is to one operating system. It's open for everybody, and that's really encouraging. In fact, I love using Microsoft Office apps on my iOS devices. So much so that in the last week or so, I've moved 5 years worth of Evernote onto OneNote, and I'm loving it. So if anybody wants a plug, then that was it. Now, the thing with mobile services, from the dashboard point of view, I can come through, and straight away we can see that it's going to give me some pointers. It's going to say, hey, tell me what sort of thing you're going to talk to. What's your end goal here? I can go through whether it's Windows, iOS, Android, straight HTML, JavaScript, Xamarin, or PhoneGap, and it will then change what's happening down here to suit. So if I said I was working on an Android app, it's going to give me a pointer to download the Android tools. It's going to let me create a sample table to start get it started with, and it's going to let me download an actual application. So much so that when I download this project, it's going to bind it automatically, so the source code, when it's received, is linked to my mobile service. So from a getting started point of view, they've already done a lot of the work. Now, the beauty with mobile services is the fact that they've done all the work anyway. I can connect to and from this database without writing any code. They've done the lifting. This is cool if you want to work with the likes of a simple to-do list, which is the one that they give you here. It can be extended out to, you know, work with more complicated data sets. But if you're talking enterprise, then you're going to start looking at things like WCF or Web API. But again, Microsoft have done such a stellar job with the way that Azure has been architected that we can do that inside Visual Studio quickly, and we'll jump to that in just a little while. Now, I downloaded this project in two different flavors. One is Xamarin, so here we've got Xamarin Studio. Xamarin Studio, unfortunately, does have a few quirks. We'll just see if it's going to play nicely. Sometimes it doesn't bind correctly to the simulator. And I'm purposely using the Mac for this. Xamarin Studio on the Windows is a very similar experience on the basis that you actually are required to run a build component on a Mac to work through. But here we've got the Azure Mobile Services. We can do a sync, so straight out of the box, it's pulling data from that table. Now, at this point, I can start digging through the code. I can start looking at different things that they've provided. Add a new item, and we're going to see that that gets added to the software and pushed up. The emphasis here is on the fact that mobile services have already done the lifting for me. So when it comes to that question of where's the data going, where's it coming from, you've got the ability of hooking into an infrastructure that's already there. Now what I'll do is quit that particular simulator and switch over to Xcode. Xcode's one of those applications that you either love or you hate, or you love to hate. In some cases, I'd love Xcode to have babies with Visual Studio. And then Visual Studio is probably the best development tool that we use, but there's some really nice little bits in Xcode as well. Anybody played around with VS Code yet? The hardcore people in the room? So, just a quick show of hands, who's the developer in the room versus, okay. Whew. I was hoping that I wasn't talking too much to DevOps. Not that there's anything wrong with DevOps, but. So here we've got an iPhone 6 simulator. Let's just scale that back to something we can see. And there's the Xcode version of the same thing hidden in the same service. Now again, for me to start playing with this, I didn't write any code. I simply stepped through the Azure sample and away I go. I'm not gonna get too hung up on all the power that's sitting inside mobile services at the back end, other than to say it puts covers on SQL for me. I can very quickly jump into a table, I can see my data, I can actually see the columns, I can work on the columns. It's got this beautiful black boxing happening for the data inside SQL. And best of all, it also supports sync out of the box. So there's the ability for you to implement that offline scenario that I talked about. Again, if you're starting out with some of this stuff and you're wanting to play with mobile services or mobile apps, it's a great platform. So we've got the ability of the fact that we can look at Xamarin, we can look at Xcode, as far as visual editors and things go. Nothing super flash, it's just an IDE. But I did bring up before the fact that there's other options out there. And I am a bit of a fan of HTML-based or JavaScript SPA applications. There's so many acronyms, you get lost in them sometimes. So what I'll do now is just jump over to PC7. I have to say it out loud so that I get it right when I go down there. And here we've got good old familiar Visual Studio. 2015 provided some really good support for PhoneGap. There's templates built in, there's other things. But what I want to do is spend a couple of minutes just showing you another framework that's provided on top of PhoneGap that would make your development experience a lot easier when it comes to targeting three platforms. See, when you develop software and you want it to be cross-platform, you've got some other considerations. If I run my app on iOS and then Android and then Windows Phone, do I have to worry about skinning it? Do I have to worry about the look and feel? I don't want some vanilla generic app just sitting around so that the user goes, oh, well, this is pretty boring. You know, we choose our phones based on a lot of things. I think Brad said it this morning, devices are very personal to us. You know, I prefer iOS. I carry an Android phone and a Microsoft phone just in case of the people I'm talking to, but my personal preference is iOS. We've already seen Android is the winner in the room today. Yet there's people with their Microsoft phones. So what we want is when we develop an app, especially if it's cross-platform, we want it to be not generic. We want it to look and feel as a true native experience. When you build something with Xamarin, it's going to give you a native application. It's going to go through and it's going to go, oh, here's the underlying libraries, and you end up with a compiled IPA for iOS and APK for Android as a true native file. When you start looking at SPAs, we can package them so that they are available on the device, but they're not native. PhoneGap uses some hardware layers underneath to provide access to things like the camera, geolocation, and other hardware features. And that's unique to each platform. But you don't end up with a native application. At the end of the day, it is HTML5, JavaScript, CSS packaged for that device. So one of the things that I particularly like working with is a product called DevXtreme, and it sits on top of PhoneGap. The beauty here is that as a developer, I don't have to do any extra work to actually get my application looking and feeling like a native application. And there's a couple of really cool things I want to show you. First of all, if I'm working whether it be with an on-premises system or even a cloud-based system, I can actually have an entire OData service wizard built for me. Now, I mentioned before that one of the problems you might encounter is the fact that it's up to you as a developer to work out that data layer. It's now fallen on your plate. With something like the WCF data service, it can provide a really quick interface so that you not have to write WCF or web API to get your project off the ground. And what I did is created one a little earlier. It's running in the background in an instance of IIS, and it's bound to a quick local database. So if I was going to do that from scratch, I'd pick the data service I want, and through a couple of quick wizards, apparently there's left and right on the mouse pad, it will go through and step me through what I need to build to connect to this data service. It's using Entity Framework, so tried and tested methods. I get to pick the database connection I want. So here we'll just connect quickly to SQL Express and pick R1 Connect Database. At this point, all I need to do is step through. Yes, I want you to add Entity Framework and select the objects that I want to bind to. Now, as any good wizard, it's going to go off and do a number of things behind the scenes for me. Obviously, I can then jump through, tweak that. I can add security layers to that. I can do other things. But it's taking care of a lot of lifting. And if my job as a developer is just to start doing things like prototyping a mobile app or working through some of those earlier questions and showing the end user or the customer or your department head what's available, it's certainly quite handy. We won't worry about source control today. Anybody use Dropbox for source control? Okay, what we have here is a simple project. I'm going to set my service file as the startup. And, well, I won't need to run it because I'm running it in the background already. Now, what I can do from that point, and what I did earlier, is come in and create another new project. Because most mobile applications really do have a basic user interface, it's pulling some data, editing some data, pushing some data. So at this point, I want to create another new project. This time, I want it to be a multi-channel application. Remembering that we're working inside Visual Studio, we're working with HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. I can nominate whether I want to create a web and or mobile application and whether I want JavaScript or TypeScript. I had an interesting statistic recently that the new version of Angular was built with the TypeScript tools that, in actual fact, allowed them to find a number of problems in the original JavaScript. So I think as time goes on, we're going to see a lot more come from JavaScript. Again, using the different wizards, I could select whether what type of navigation bar I want, nav or slide. I'm just going to go next. Quickly discover. Well, I discover my service model. And what I'd end up with, to save time, would be a project that has been pre-built from the wizards to link directly to that mobile service or that web service. I'm just going to run that inside Edge. And what we're going to see is an iOS 6 style application. It's pulling data from SQL Express. So we can see we've got lists, it's got caching. But more importantly, and the thing that I want to drive home here, let's see if I can just scale it back so I can see it. That's an iPhone 6. If I take the exact same application, not change anything, but simply run it on an Android device, I'm now going to see an Android style application. The first thing you'll notice, obviously, is navigation. It's switched from being iOS-y at the bottom to Android. As I move through using CSS, we're going to get that nice set of effects happening. And if I take that again and run it on Windows 8, I now get a Windows 8 look and feel interface. If I tap on one of these items, it's gone through and built all the views for editing, creating, etc. Now, this is made possible because of that SPA framework, because of the PhoneGap framework, and then another one sitting on top. If I go back to my list, when you're developing for multi-platform, you've got to consider, is there a hardware button? You know, iOS doesn't have a back button. It doesn't have a physical button, where other devices do. So well, the other nice things I particularly like about this framework for cross-platform development is the fact that from within Visual Studio, I can actually build native packages. I don't need a Mac to actually deploy an IPA for iOS. I can create an APK for Android. I can create an iOS file. All because of the PhoneGap or the Adobe Cordova framework, I can step through that. It will even create certificates and things for me. And again, sitting inside Visual Studio, which as a Microsoft-centric development conference is the tool that we all prefer to use. Now, I won't do that one yet. Let's open it up for questions as to cross-platform or app choices. If you've got war stories that you think other people could benefit from, be open to share. Yes? Okay, so the question was, when you use PhoneGap, do you feel limited in your choices for UI as opposed to developing natively? My experience, no, because I think that the fact that you're working with a HTML-based framework anyway, if anything, you have more choices. You're not locked into just native control sets, and there should be nothing that you can do natively that you can't do with the Cordova or the PhoneGap framework. Anybody else? Somebody, sorry. Bright lights.
What about the debugging experience? I did a Cordova app within the 2 out of 3 stores. You can guess which one it was. The debugging experience in all 3 platforms was really quite different. Does DevExtreme bring along any new tools in that, or Visual Studio 2015? Is experience getting any better?
Okay, so the question was that generally your debugging experience was pretty bad using PhoneGap, and are there any improvements in that at this stage, basically? Okay. I think the debugging experience I get across any mobile application is poor, full stop, native or hybrid. I mean, for example, and I'll answer your question in more detail in just 1 second, I've been working on iOS development since 6 years now. Back when Xcode and the Interface Builder were separate applications and you had to manually get things to hook up. It was a nightmare experience. All these years later, iOS 9, Xcode 7, and you can't simulate taking a photograph with the iOS simulator. You have to do it on a device. You can't push out to a device unless you've got the correct debugging profile, which then is a nightmare in itself. So I don't think there's any the debugging experience across all of them, in my opinion, is ghastly. When it comes to something like Cordova, there's a number of plugins you can get for your browser that make that a lot easier. With something like DevExtreme, yes, you can use the simulator to help debug. You can step through. Being a browser-based scenario, obviously, you can just use the onboard tools as well. There is no happy answer, though. It is still the file system. straight away. If you're working with a PhoneGap application and you want to be writing, just simply write some data to the device, you can't do that in a PhoneGap app if you're using the PhoneGap libraries. You've got to push it out to the actual device to test it. There's a lot of different setup scenarios for debugging, and you've got to work out which one suits you, just like which browser you prefer. Other questions? Yes. Great question. So the question was, is there any time where you would guide people towards responsive web apps? And one of the interesting things there, I think, is that web apps, by their nature, are served from a server. Yes, you can save some to work offline, etc., but you're not going to get as much experience. You can't access the hardware layers across web apps. Yes, you can access the camera now because it's available with the HTML5 language set, but there's so much you can't access. I'm not a big fan of trying to railroad anybody into any one development environment. It comes down to your existing skill set. Like some C# developers are like, no, I will only work on C#, and that's okay. I'm all for responsive and, what's the other word? Adaptive web pages. If you're talking about writing a mobile app, you've got to think outside that it's going to be packaged, so therefore it's got to be an SPA, not some traditional sense, because it's got to be served from somewhere. Does that answer, Sibley? Was there a hand up behind there? Or somebody scratching their nose, confusing me? Yes? Okay, so the question is, how do you handle system calls in PhoneGap? The beauty with PhoneGap is that you've got the underlying hardware layers, so all of the calls are available. Well, I say all of the calls. There's some calls that I think should be in PhoneGap that still aren't, but a lot of the stuff is already there with calls from within your JavaScript application. Okay, so in short, your question was TypeScript or JavaScript, which is better? Look, if I was sitting at a place where I'm going to learn this stuff from scratch, then I would go TypeScript. There is so many benefits of TypeScript. At the end of the day, you end up with JavaScript, but you know that it's type safe. You've got all the checks and balances that have gone through. So there are so many challenges for C# developers to take on JavaScript because there's so much conditioning that we've gone through that just doesn't apply. You know, functions are objects, objects are functions. There's only one numeric type. It's a floating point. There's nothing else. You use 3 equals instead of 2. All sorts of quirky things. So TypeScript is great for breaking or helping you get into that scenario without making a lot of common mistakes. Anybody want to disagree with that? Duh. Other questions? Yes, at the back. Sorry, can you speak up a little? I can't hear you. I'm still missing the key word. That's a leading question. Is it mature for production? I've not had much experience with it, so I'm going to defer the question to anybody used it, React?
Yeah, not quite yet. It looks nice.
It's fun? Yeah. Production ready? Okay. But would you use it in an internal application? Absolutely, Facebook uses it. I'd probably, the same question could be raised of Objective-C and Swift. I mean, I said before that I prefer native. I won't put Swift in production code yet, because even though it's at version 2, it's, in my humble opinion, not ready. Any last questions? Where am I? Sorry? Oh, whoa, right at the top. Okay. There's a lot of different ways to handle your offline, and it's not based on whether it's Xamarin or DevXtreme. As far as DevXtreme goes, it's a framework that provides the cool UI that you don't have to worry about. So it's still going to lean to what you can use inside PhoneGap as far as file management. There's a number of other frameworks that do offline really quite nicely. Azure in itself does that nicely. And as you've seen, there's support already for PhoneGap, straight HTML JavaScript, as well as Xamarin. And some of the tutorials that you can get on the Azure website will actually step you through how to make your app work offline. There's other products such as CouchDB that has really good synchronization support. When you start looking at data sync, there's a lot of things to consider, such as conflict resolution. And when you start building your tables, you've got to make sure that you've taken that into account as to, well, what happens if the data's changed from when I got it back? How am I going to handle those things? So it in itself is quite a large topic to debate. Yes? Okay, so the question is, would I, for more complicated animations and UI, would I go Xamarin or the HTML5 type scenario? Look, Xamarin Forms is great, but it is limited as to its wrappers around other things. And this is one of the downsides of building complex apps in Xamarin. You've then got to start building all these custom controls to handle what's going on each platform. I'd still go back to the HTML JavaScript solution because at the end of the day, it's implementing the HTML5 specification. So you've got direct access to the canvas.
Well, that's a gotcha. I don't mean to monopolize this, but one of the biggest issues I had in trying to debug my app in HTML5 JavaScript was the fact that standard isn't standard. The semantics, the syntax might be standard, but the semantics aren't always. And those bugs are really, really tricky. So
okay, you bring up an interesting point, and just before I go to this gentleman with his question, anybody who's doing work in HTML, JavaScript, CSS should be making sure they're using tools like JSLint. Make sure, because there's so many websites, even basic websites, that when you stick it through the W3 validator tool or you put it through JSLint, there are so many basic JavaScript problems. And the compilers hide a lot of that from us. It just skips over things. It just continues and tries to do the best it can, which also hinders the debugging experience. So my first point, whenever I look at somebody else's code, is say, well, let's throw it through JSLint, and let's see what it brings up. And the really cool thing there is the fact whether you're using Sublime Text as your editor or whether you're using Visual Studio, you can use a JSLint plugin. And for any hybrid slash web development, I think that's absolute must. You just right-click the file, say JSLint it, and it gives you a list of any errors that are outside the specification.
The problems I had were in HTML5.
Okay. So the W3 validation tool. We'll take this one offline because that could be fun. Yes? So when you say background, you can actually build your package to be put into the background, depending on the operating system. When you say background task, give me a scenario.
Well, kind of as you were saying before, you know, you don't have connection at the moment, someone saved this, and you want to sync it
Okay, so when you're going to get notification of the event, depending on the device. So this is back to that whole, what do I want to build for? And then you need to understand the ecosystem of the device you're working on. If we're talking about, say, iOS, I'm going to get a notification through PhoneGap to say you're about to be put into background. At that point, I can spool off another thread or do something, say, hey, I want to sync. But you're still at the whim of the operating system. So it depends what it's going to support. I mean, iOS is one of the hardest to deal with for background tasks. You can set in your project the fact that you're a telephony application or a music application, and it's supposed to then let you continue processing in the background. But that is not always the case. In fact, there was a big thing recently about Facebook and the amount of memory or power consumption because they were playing around with stuff that, you know, reporting to the operating system that they were something they weren't, and it ended up chewing up a lot of battery life, and there was a big media storm over that. Any questions? One more? Where am I looking now, sorry? Oh, those lights are killer. Yes? Okay, so that's some good feedback. So basically, the gentleman was just saying, hey, we want some better examples as to how to customize things with that particular product. No problem at all. I'll pass that on to the team. So what was the number one rule that I wanted you to take away from today's session? Obviously got that home well, didn't I? Always design your app with offline in mind. It's going to save you a heap of time and a heap of grief when it comes to publishing your applications to your users. Whether it's a Surface that you think you've got web access to or anything else, over the years it's saved me so much time and grief just to make sure that you're saving. Even if it's just think of Word, autosave. I mean, it was a feature that snuck in early Office versions, but wow, what a powerful feature it was, because something happened and you could recover your document. Think in that term, because users, when you're developing utility applications, or users have so many choices for mobile apps. So moving outside the corporate environment, you've got the next killer version of Angry Nerds that you're going to write. It's one of those things where your application is only one click away from the next person if your UI is not responsive. Or if you've done, you open it up and boom. The other one point I've neglected to mention before, and this is again more based if you're looking at BYOD or putting your apps into the App Store, and that is every OS upgrade will break something, guaranteed. You need to be, if you're going to be brave enough to publish an app into the store, you need to be aware of that. And customers get very vocal very quickly. Forget the betas. Like, people that start complaining your software doesn't work on a beta, meh. But when it comes to release, you've got to be ready. And between iOS 6, 7, 8, and 9, Apple broke more things than I care to remember. They'd break it in 7, fix it in 8, break it in 9. And if you've got workarounds for some of those things, you're left high and dry. You can't control when your users are going to upgrade their operating system, especially with BYOD. It's out of your hands. But if you want to create a cult, and again, more consumer-based, but if you want those people to be writing good reviews and you want to keep that revenue stream coming in, don't just write an app and think, oh, she's sweet, I get my royalty check every quarter from whoever, because it drops off too quickly. Yeah, we've got 60, 70 apps across the different app stores now. Some of them 200,000-300,000 users at a time. We have to make sure that things are in play. And it can be tough. Yeah? Banking apps. The first thing that breaks with a OS upgrade is usually the banking app, which is really frustrating when you're standing at the queue waiting to get served, move some money, and go, oh, that's right, I've got to find a web browser now and do it the long way. All right, a couple of quick housekeeping things. Complete the session eval. There are some really, really cool prizes for you filling out your evaluation. They're so cool they wouldn't actually tell us what they are. It was a top secret thing. But please, for every session you go to, jump in and complete your evaluation. Feedback's critical. Negative feedback's great because we know what to change for next time. But feedback is something that every speaker wants to have. And of course, continue your learning while you're here at Ignite. There's some hands-on labs. There's instructor-led training. Tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to be doing a C++ cross-platform development instructor-led training course at 3 o'clock. So if you're feeling brave and want to see how C++ guys do cross-platform, then head up there as well. And of course, it doesn't stop here once you've finished your Ignite week. There's plenty of resources available. Azure has got a ton of stuff for the different facets of that, be it mobile development or anything else with Azure. And of course, Microsoft's Channel 9, channel9.msdn.com has got some great resources as well. So I hope you learned something from today, and thank you all for joining me.